joining us now on the Harbor One Hotline to talk not only some NBA draft, but how Brad Stevens is going to approach or need to approach this offseason. It's our friend, former general manager in the NBA, Ryan McDonough. Insider calls are presented by Hey Maine, a new podcast from Kenny Maine. Each week, Kenny talks famous people from the world of sports, music, and everywhere else. Download Hey Maine on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Mr. McDonough, Gretchen Keefe, good to talk to you again, friend. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm doing well, and it's always great to be on with you, too.
Well, let's start with tomorrow night's NBA draft. And I know there's a lot of rumblings. There's a lot of murmurs out there right now. But as I see it, Ryan, there isn't that one, two, or maybe three players the teams feel, oh, my God, I got to go get this guy. Now, maybe I'm reading it wrong. There seems to be a lot of trade chatter out there. Are there players to fall in love with in this upcoming NBA draft?
I think you're reading it correctly. I think this is a relatively flat draft at the top. A lot of people are talking about the top three players in the front court, Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, and Paolo Banchero. I would put Jaden Ivey, the guard from Purdue, in that mix as well. So I think it's a draft where you could get good value, maybe picking three, four, or somewhere in the mid-lottery. It's not a draft, frankly, that I'd be clamoring to get the number one pick, just because I think we could look back years from now and say the best player to come out of the 2022 draft was a guy who was not the number one pick, maybe not even a guy who ends up being drafted in the top two or three.
What do you think the mindset is for Brad Stevens going into the draft where you only have one pick and it's late in the second round? So obviously the scouting, I guess, would be a little bit different. But then again, trades happen all the time on draft night, whether you're getting an established player or a pick. So going into a draft without a first round pick, what is that like?
Well, it's not a position I've been in a lot. When I was in Boston, we built the team primarily through the draft alongside Danny Ainge, and then made the trades in 2007. And then in Phoenix, it was primarily through the draft as well. But I have been there once or twice. It's a little bit boring, to be honest with you, yeah, because you're sitting there waiting just for picks to go by, and you realize that the players, when you're picking, especially if you're the Celtics in the 50s, are not going to be the most exciting names, and the odds of hitting at that level are usually relatively low. So, but I do think that's the case for the Celtics. I mean, you guys know where the team is. They were up 2-1. They were up in game four of the NBA Finals before Golden State flipped it and then won the series in six. So this is a team that's right at the precipice of winning a title. And they also have young players. As I look down their bench, in Aaron Nesmith and Peyton Pritchard, who haven't played much, if at all, in the playoffs and the finals, especially in the case of Nesmith, that they would like to get more minutes for. So I think Boston will be patient. I don't see them, being aggressive, trying to trade into the first round where their roster and payroll are. I think they probably let the draft come and go. And then if they do upgrade the team, my guess is they either do it in free agency or, more likely, via trade.
Odyssey NBA insider Ryan McDonough here with Gretchen Keefe talking about building a team, getting into Brad Stevens and the offseason. And off of that, Ryan, Brad Stevens mentioned yesterday about he'd like to add more playmaking. And Keefe and I really broke that down, because does that mean potentially looking for an upgraded point guard? Does it just mean getting Aaron Nesmith more minutes? Is there somebody else you want to add to the bench? How did you take that comment from Brad Stevens on adding more playmaking ability?
I agree with what Brad said. As a former executive, I would look to do the same. I think when the team struggled, especially in the finals, it was because Jason Tatum in particular was asked to do too much, and they didn't have additional shot creation options against a very good Golden State defense. So I think playmaking is a need, especially if you look at where the Celtics were last year. You guys know they started 16-19 and were underwhelming in 2021, and then really flipped the script in 2022 and were perhaps the best team in the league all the way up until the NBA Finals in 2022. That was primarily done with their defense. They were the best defensive team in the NBA, especially in that stretch, once they turned their season around in January. But I do think they need more shot creation, more playmaking. You guys know Jason Tatum set a record for most turnovers all time in the NBA playoffs. I think that's a little bit misleading as a stat, because if you look at the other guys on that list, they're some of the all-time great players who, in order to be there, you have to have the ball in your hands a lot. You have to be asked to do a lot, and then you have to be capable of creating plays for yourself and others. So I don't want to pin that on Tatum. I bring it up relative to Stevens as an executive looking to alleviate some of the burden that Tatum carries and trying to get him some help. I think that was one of the deciding factors in the NBA Finals. I didn't see it going that way, frankly, when the Finals were starting, but I thought the Celtics would have a bench advantage. If you look at the final series, especially as the series went on, in Game 6 in particular, when Jordan Poole went off for Golden State, I think that's a lot of how the series was won. The Warriors bench outplayed the Celtics bench. And I think that's something that Stevens and his staff will look to rectify this offseason.
Celtics have three trade player exceptions they can use in the offseason. The big money one from Evan Fournier, over $17 million, that one expires sometime next month. What realistically, in your mind, could they even do with that one?
Well, that's a good trade exception, and that's certainly the most likely way for them to upgrade the team without subtracting a lot from the team. Keep in mind, with that $17.1 million trade exception, they can absorb a player into that who makes that amount or less. So I was actually on NBC Sports Boston the other night, and Chris Forsberg had some good names, the potential fits in there. One guy that we discussed was Kevin Huerter from Atlanta, and I think the Hawks are a team that went to the conference finals a year ago, took a step back this season. They paid John Collins, and I think they thought they were pretty well set up coming into the season, and this year did not go according to plan. And I bring up the Hawks because they have a lot of tradable contracts. Clearly, the trend line in the short term is not going in the right direction. And when you have a young star like Trae Young, you want to maximize his prime and potential. So I keep an eye on guys like that. I mean, you know, if you look up and down the league, talented players making, say, $10 to $17 million in that mid-level plus area. And Herter's a guy who would fit because of his shooting ability, because he's not just a catch-and-shoot player. He can do a little more than that. He makes $14.5 million next year. Obviously, to get a talented young player like that, Boston would have to give some value. But I keep an eye on that, and that would fit along the lines of what Brad Stevens is looking for. Maybe not the traditional classic playmaking point guard, but a guy who can catch and make shots, open shots, and then can also be a secondary playmaker who can attack closeouts or make plays from the weak side.
Ryan, when you think about this draft, and you mentioned that it's kind of flat, will that lead to more trades? Do you think there are teams, like, we know Brad Stevens wants to find something very specific. There's some teams who need to make big moves to get better. Some teams are making little moves along the way. Are you expecting this to be a very active trade season overall in the NBA?
Yes, very much so. And I think the reason for that, guys, is because it's not a great free agent class. In terms of, if you look at the top players, my expectation and the expectation of most of the people I talk to around the league who are team presidents and GMs is that most of the marquee names on the free agent list will re-sign with their current team. I think Bradley Beal will re-sign in Washington and do a long-term deal with the Wizards. I think Zach LaVine is likely to re-sign in Chicago as a Bull. Same with James Harden in Philadelphia. So I bring all that up because that puts more emphasis on the trade market, because if you're a championship contending team, which clearly Boston is, they were right there on the precipice this year, how do you upgrade your team? Well, if you can't sign free agents because the talent's not that good and because you don't have cap space available, then you have to do it via trade. So I think because of that, and also, guys, because of the changes the NBA has made over the last couple of years, which I think have been good for competitive balance, starting with the lottery reform, where the lottery is more balanced now, so that I think if you look at it from a macro perspective, makes it less likely that a bunch of teams will try to tank and race to the bottom. And then secondarily, the play-in game added, the play-in scenario now where 20 teams make the initial playoff field instead of 16, where, more teams, even if they're sub-500, heading into February and March, they still think they have a chance. I think all that means that in the short term, teams will be more aggressive and that more teams will can help them immediately rather than, draft picks and things going out in the future.
If you were running the Nets, would you re-sign Kyrie Irving?
Would you quit?
Boy, I would do everything I can, and it seems like this is what they are doing, to try to get him to opt in for the 1 year next year at $37 million. We'll see if Kyrie does that or not. Guys, I'll take a step back and look at it from a 30,000-foot view of the entire league. Here are the teams I'm projecting to have significant cap space. The Portland Trail Blazers, the Detroit Pistons, the Orlando Magic, the Indiana Pacers, Kyrie Irving's not going to any of those teams. I mean, let's be realistic. So I bring it up from a leverage standpoint. You know, Kyrie's leverage, I guess, would be, okay, I'll opt out and leave. Well, where's he going to go? You know, where's he going to go if Brooklyn doesn't participate in a sign and trade or something like that? So my guess, and it's just a guess, but is that maybe they split the difference where, you know, he opts into $36 million. They maybe do one more year on the deal, but from Brooklyn, there's no way I'd want to give that guy a 4 or 5 year max deal. We've seen how few games he's played in, and you know, all the off court distractions with the vaccination and just the circus around Kyrie over the last two seasons in particular. So it's a real tough position that Joe Tsai, the owner, and Sean Marks, the GM, are in. But you know, frankly, they put themselves in this position, and I think they'll do everything they can to, if they do bring Kyrie Irving back, make sure it's on a shorter term deal. Where if it doesn't go well, if Kyrie keeps acting this way, they have the ability to pivot and get out of it relatively easily without doing long-term damage to the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, if I was, as a Celtics fan, I would just say no to Kyrie. Sign and trade, great, but if it's just him back in any capacity, I would say no. You'd mentioned some of the other potential free agents, and you think James Harden, and I agree with you, likely to re-sign with Philly, but is that the right move for them after watching another real head-scratching playoff performance from this guy?
Well, whether it is or it isn't, the reality of the situation is that decision has already been made. And what I mean by that is when you give up that kind of value,
right,
that like Philadelphia gave up, yes, Ben Simmons was disgruntled and didn't play and has not played since then, but he is talented and he's still, you know, in his mid-20s. But also keep in mind that Philly, in the deal with Brooklyn to bring in James Harden, gave up Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and then multiple first-round picks. So if you give up all that, especially as a team that's well over the salary cap with or without James Harden. If you look at Philly's payroll, they have Joel Embiid, who makes a lot of money, Tobias Harris on basically a max contract. To look at it the other way, guys, if the Philadelphia 76ers were to let James Harden walk, then they're replacing him with an exception player or a minimum player. Clearly, he's better than that. So I think it's something where, and it seems like these conversations may have already taken place, they're going to try to convince James to re-sign on a shorter deal or maybe a deal that's close to the max, just a little south of the max, and then hope it works better going forward than it has worked. But a lot of it will be on James and how motivated he is and what kind of shape he comes into when training camp starts in the fall.
Ryan, last thing from me. What are the Lakers going to do with their mess? What are the realistic options? Like, who wants Russell Westbrook at this point in his NBA career?
At $47 million, nobody. Respectfully, frankly, nobody. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that to pick on a future Hall of Famer or be, you know, cold or callous about it, but that's just the reality of the situation. He's worth a fraction of that amount. If he were a free agent today and every team in the league had cap space and could pay him whatever, he'd get, I don't know, $10 million, something like that, but not $47 million. So that's the challenge. But he is in the last year. Clearly, he will opt into the player option. And, you know, for the Lakers, again, you're trying to maximize LeBron James and Anthony Davis's prime, especially LeBron's, as he's in his late 30s now, and then AD with his injury issues. There's some, you know, legitimate concerns about how long he will last and be effective. So I think they suck it up. I think they bring Westbrook back for another year. If they could trade him for a couple of lesser contracted players, lesser salary players to help give them some balance and depth, I think they would do that. But I just don't think that's available, guys, because, other than maybe Charlotte, if they do something wild, which I'm not anticipating, I don't know who takes on Westbrook at $47 million. Now, if Russell gets bought out, that's a different story, but I don't think that's in the Lakers' best interest, because if they were to buy him out, keep in mind that they still have a majority of that $47 million, that amount less the buyout on their salary cap for next year, which really encumbers what they can do with the rest of their roster.
There were reports late last week, even earlier this week, that the Orlando Magic still don't know what they're going to do with the number one overall pick in tomorrow night's draft. When you were running Phoenix and you guys had the number one pick a couple of years ago, how soon in the process did you know you were taking DeAndre Ayton?
I think it was relatively close to draft night. I mean, you want to, you know, you obviously have a feeling about what you may do or the guys who were in the mix for that pick for sure. But then you want to go through the medical, you want to go through the intel, you want to make sure you don't miss anything that would be a disqualifier, you know, in terms of physical, medical, mental, what have you. So I think, you know, there may be some legitimacy to that with Orlando. But look at it this way, guys. If the three of us were in the Magic's front office, we'd want the same thing out there. You know, we'd want front, the fact that we're wide open, that we haven't decided on anybody, because you want the teams, especially the teams directly behind you, if you're the Magic, who are the OKC Thunder in that number two slot, and then the Houston Rockets, who pick third, you would want them, if they fall in love with one certain guy, you would want them to think that they need to trade up to make sure they get that guy. And if you're Orlando, you say, yeah, we're comfortable taking any of the top three or four guys, and if you want him, come pay us a premium to come up and get number one. We're open to doing business, but it's going to cost you a lot.
Were you guys close on anybody else? Just because you look at the next two picks and what a difference. You know, Marvin Bagley goes two, and then Luka Doncic goes three. And then, you know, he eventually gets traded down to five for Trae Young. But, I mean, between Bagley and Doncic is a massive gap there. Were either of those guys close?
Oh, sure. I mean, we certainly evaluated all those guys. Jaren Jackson Jr. was a guy who impressed in the process as well. You know, our thought process, and, you know, without being too specific, keep in mind that I got fired that preseason before any of those guys played a game. So, you know, I think it's you could probably draw the conclusion that there was some dissent and disagreement, you know, around the way the 2018 Suns offseason went. But I bring it up because thought process, right or wrong, and what we ended up going with was we had Devin Booker, a young backcourt star, DeAndre Ayton we thought could be a, you know, a frontcourt star who could really complement Devin's weaknesses with his rebounding, you know, lob threat ability, rim protection ability, defense, all those kind of things, and his skill inside. And then once that decision was made, you know, who's the best guy to put on the wing between them, and we felt that was Mikal Bridges. So we ended up later in that draft making a trade. You know, I understand the pick has been criticized. I've you know, bore the brunt of that. I would point out to people that Phoenix Suns went to the finals 2 years ago, and this year they had the best record in the league, led primarily by those three guys, Booker, Bridges, and Ayton, and with Chris Paul being their, you know, the other player in their top four. So I've been raked over the coals for it, but it's a results-oriented business, and I think as you look at the Suns and their team over the last couple of years, the results have been pretty good.
Well, the results are always great when Ryan McDonough joins us here on Gresh and Keefe. Thank you. Enjoy tomorrow night, and I'm sure we'll talk to you throughout the summer, Ryan. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, guys. Always great to be on with you.
There we go. Appreciate Ryan McDonough with us on the Harbor One Hotline. And again, Odyssey NBA insider Ryan McDonough. Insider calls are presented by Hey Maine, a new podcast from Kenny Maine.